Doctor Who is back. We're talking all about Spyfall, Part 1. Up next on Don't Blink from Golden Spiral Media.
This is your Don't Blink podcast, a fan podcast devoted to the BBC series known as Doctor Who. Sharing thoughts, theories, and listener feedback are your hosts, Wayne Henderson and Jada Wilkerson.
Happy New Year to you and yours. Back for more Don't Blink Doctor Who discussions, I see. Me? I'm Wayne Henderson, your voice acting Green Bay Packers fan, and don't you just hate it when your car's nav system shoots lasers out at your face?
That's always the worst. Yes, I'm Jada Wilkerson, Whovian, comics enthusiast and storyteller. And you know what I can't stand? Nosy alien party crashers. Well, I mean, normally, but I guess if it's the Doctor, it's cool.
You just never know.
On this edition of Don't Blink, we'll review this week's Doctor Who episode, Spyfall Part 1. Go over the weekly Twitter and Facebook poll results and comments.
And we're going to share your great listener feedback. Let your voice be heard. Be part of every episode of Don't Blink this season, okay? Call our voicemail at 304-837-2278 or by using our voicemail widget from anywhere in the world at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. Get your feedback in every Monday night by 11 p.m. Eastern to be part of the show. So, Jada, let's share what we loved, maybe some things we didn't, about Spyfall Part 1. And I'll start because it was just plain fun to see the Doctor and her companions make it to MI6 headquarters alive and get shown all sorts of James Bondish style of gadgets and hearing Graham exclaim, "Bring on the bling," just like I would.
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed that. I was really hoping to see some of those gadgets used.
Maybe in part two?
Yeah, that's what I was hoping. Maybe they'll show up in part two. There were some things there that seemed very specific, as if there were callbacks to other things that I'm just not aware of. Hopefully someone can let us know, or if you might know, Wayne.
Nothing specific jumped out, but so many of them, because there's been so many James Bond movies and other spy movies over the years, including the Get Smart TV show, that a lot of the things just seemed familiar, like the shoe that would shoot out lasers or the cufflinks that would do something. But we'll see. Yeah, since part two is still obviously called Spyfall, I think we're going to get some more spy goodness in there.
Yeah, it's full of spy goodness. I really enjoyed it. Another thing I really enjoyed was the dynamic duo of Ryan and Graham. Yet again, they are back.
Yeah, they make for a great team. Obviously, you know, they've been a family for a certain amount of time. I still miss Graham's wife, even though we did kind of see her almost like a ghost version of her in that one episode last season. But at least these two are getting along and they're going out and doing their thing.
Absolutely. It was good to see them do their thing without all the tension from last season between the two of them.
Oh, yeah.
It worked out great. They meld together wonderfully.
Yeah, they've moved on beyond that, and now it's all action all the time. But, Jada, you remember rule number one about espionage, right? Trust no one?
Absolutely.
And watching this episode, I didn't trust – well, I kind of trusted the Doctor – but and the friends, the companions, but everyone else, no trust there.
Well, you know, it's been a while, and I'm glad we're back. We're back to Doctor Who, but I may have forgotten that first rule. And I trusted O. I thought he was an interesting character, but, well, we'll see how that turned out.
Oh, absolutely. Speaking of O, because when they were visiting him at his home down in the Australian outback, he just seemed like a kind of odd Doctor Who fanboy, as far as a fanboy of the real Doctor. Because he has that, didn't he tell Graham that he had some books and a bunch of information he's compiled over the years? And he kind of asked Graham if he'd go take a look at it. And I wish he would have in hindsight.
You know, in hindsight, that scene is so much more delicious now, knowing that that was who that was. Just toying with one of the Doctor's companions. Well, fam.
Exactly. And that's his MO over the years.
Absolutely. We know some other things that I really enjoyed. One thing was Yaz getting transported to the place that seemed a bit like the Upside Down on Stranger Things, and then coming back with less human DNA. Yeah, that can't be good.
This is an interesting new twist on how aliens are trying to take over people, you know, in the Doctor Who universe. I've never heard of this combination before. And this whole episode, although there were some parts of it that seemed a little slower than they needed to be, for the most part, there was a lot of tension. And I am really worried if Yaz will ever be herself again, or if it even matters, if she's still mostly human in the DNA thing. Did it seem like the Upside Down to you as well, as much as it did to me?
I thought that, I thought of Stranger Things several scenes before. I can't remember which scenes, but I just had that feeling, wow, this feels a bit like Stranger Things. And then once she was transported, I was like, oh, this feels a lot like Stranger Things. But it was done well. And I also think that if she does not retain, come back to 100% human DNA, I think I'm okay with that. I like to know that the doctor's friends can be changed by their experiences, you know? I mean, because that's a real consequence from the after all the crazy things that they do. Some of them have to be changed on some level more than just mentally.
That's a good point, Jada. Yeah, I'm wondering if we'll find out more next week or this coming Sunday night or maybe later on in this particular season. And although the episode is called Spyfall Part 1, and I love James Bond movies as much as anyone, I think this episode had, dare I say it, a little too much of the spy stuff in it. You know, made the middle of the episode drag just a little bit. The motorcycle chases through what I guess were supposed to be wine vineyards outside of San Francisco and all of that. And then, of course, then they're chasing a jet plane down the runway. But, you know, for the most part, that needed to be in there, but still maybe a little too much spy stuff. But as you'll see from my episode rating that we're going to have in just a little bit, it's more of a just a nitpick, nothing major.
No, I totally understand what you're saying. I felt the same thing. I didn't realize that it was dragging until the end when it picked up a bit. Then I was like, wow. I believe the episode was an hour and a half almost.
Yeah, just about. And I heard that part two is going to be about the same.
Nice. I enjoy that greatly. That's a great way to come back. Great season opener. Like I said, at the end, like about the last 5 minutes of the episode, they were quite intense. Like that really got me. It really grabbed my attention, and then out of nowhere, the reveal of who O was, the master, his TARDIS was just spinning outside the airplane when it was looking very Wicked Witch of the West-like, excuse me. Yeah, I love that to no end.
It was fantastic. It was over the top in all of the right ways, because all the different incarnations of the master throughout Doctor Who, they all have a little bit of manic to them in different ways. And like you said, the last 5 minutes, so intense. And when O revealed that he was the master, no lie, I actually got chills. I was that blown away. I was like, oh, wow. Everything is going to be different from here on out in the Jodie Whittaker era of Doctor Who. Because this master, he's already kind of close to insane. And at the same time that he's revealing himself and showing the bomb in the cockpit and just being so satisfied at how he was able to trick everybody, at the same time, the plane is going down in flames with the doctor's friends inside, and the doctor's getting transported to the same place that Yaz was in earlier. And like listener Neil said in the Don't Blink Facebook group, notice that the doctor seems to know where she is, although it's no less frightening that she knows.
Yeah.
But we didn't really get any clues. And in some ways, you know, the Upside Down. In other ways, it looked like maybe tall strands of hair, like she was super miniaturized. But I don't think they're going to go that simple for this land. Any ideas?
You know, actually, I don't have a clue, and that's what I'm liking. last season, it felt kind of bumpy. There were some highs and some lows, but they were frequent. This episode seemed pretty even keel, and it seemed a little deeper than last season as well. So I'm hoping that they fall through with that look that the doctor had of knowing where she is, because that would just make it so much better. Because she really, I mean, Jodie Whittaker is awesome. We know this.
True.
She really relayed like the idea of like, oh goodness, I'm here. You know, I mean, she seemed appropriately frightened and to have foreknowledge of, you know, where she was. So yeah, I think that was wonderfully done. I know I'm rambling. I'm just so excited.
Oh yeah. We're just trying to sort this whole thing out. And since it's only part one, there's only so far we're able to go in trying to sort it out. But one thing that was interesting in before we found out that O was really the master, the fact that at the beginning of the episode, the doctor says that she's met him like once or twice, and she sent him that message and signed off with saying kisses, no matter how French it sounded. What type of relationship might they have had beforehand that, of course, now is going to be totally different? Were they just trading theories about aliens back and forth, or what have you?
Well, you know, it seems, I mean, with the knowledge now that O was the master, I can only imagine that the master played it, well, masterfully. Just enough flirtation, just enough.
Oh, so this is kind of like maybe a long con. He's been working on the doctor all this time. She didn't really suspect, and maybe we don't even need or want to know if there was any romantic thing happening back then. We don't know, and we'll probably never know, but it's just something that crossed my mind because I've timey-wimey, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But you know, I would like to think that the master would not have taken it that far for sure, just to
I don't know,
kind of genuine.
In the last time that we saw the two masters, the John Sims master and Missy, John Sims master was kind of hitting on Missy, and she's like, no, that won't work. So hey, I don't know. It was just one of those things. But the big unanswered question for me from this episode, Jada, is what exactly does the master mean when he's yelling at the doctor at the very end saying, everything you think you know is a lie?
Oh, I don't know. I pondered that so hard. That's a wonderful line because it means so much, but it could mean anything at the same time. I don't know, and I can't wait to find out. Everything you know is a lie, as in?
Is it just him being a little, using a lot of hyperbole or something? Or is it literally possible that everything that the doctor knows or thinks she knows is a lie, which I don't think that's technically possible, but it was just delivered so well, that line, that it really makes you think that he believes that he's got a lot of inside information that we do not know yet. And whether we find out next week on part two, or if it's going to be something strung along through the whole season, like in some of the older seasons of Doctor Who, especially Classic Who, where, you know, the whole season kind of was one long story in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of that, I love the idea that they ended on a cliffhanger. Not too many episodes do that, I don't think. And I know we have a lot of we've had lots of two-parters recently, not so much last season, but it was a great cliffhanger, not just a thoughtful, oh, how are they going to get out of this? Like, the plane's going down. It's burning and falling. There's no doctor, only the companions, and no pilot.
And no parachutes.
No parachutes, even. Yeah, it's great. I love that they did that. It feels a little classic-y.
Yeah, I can't imagine how they're going to be able to save Graham and Yaz and Ryan and them unless there's some sort of timey-wimey that's going to come into play thanks to the doctor, because otherwise, she's going to have to act very fast, or maybe the master's just going to say, I was just kidding.
Yeah. And it's very interesting because speaking of everything you think you know is a lie, at one point I thought they might break into some theory of the multiverse with the different Earths that were being projected. And at one point, I'm not sure who, whether it was the O or whether it was, I can't remember the CEO's name.
Oh, you mean Daniel Barton? Yeah, somebody did bring that up, and that crossed my mind as well, because if we're going to have alternate Earths, I don't know if you ever watched Fringe back in the day.
Oh, yes.
That was one of the other shows that did such a fantastic job with the parallel universe and how a lot of the same people are in the other universe, but they're different. And it was just well done. So I wonder if we're going to go there, Jada.
I would like to see it. I really would. And, you know, if we do go there or something like that, it might explain something about Yaz's DNA, how she might be able to recover it, or how she might be possibly an amalgam of the two Yazes. Who knows? There's so many ways to go with that.
And also, with the doctor going to that same place, is she now missing some of her DNA? Although she's never really been human, so her DNA probably doesn't match up very much with Earthling DNA to begin with, but I wonder how changed she might be.
Yeah, I've always kind of thought of Gallifrey and DNA as being just, how do you say it, robust. They've got a little bit of everything in them. It would seem like their bodies would be able to handle, absorb, assimilate whatever it is that might have changed Yaz. I'm not sure. Who knows? Gallifreyans are so strange. But if the doctor can figure out how the DNA is being manipulated and changed, maybe she can just change Yaz back. But do we want Yaz to change back?
I do.
I think it might be interesting if there was some side effect that she had to contend with. That would be fun.
Right. They can't get off scot-free. There's got to be some sort of side effect. I agree on that part of it. And a little earlier in the episodes when they were on the motorcycles, was O kind of flirting with Yaz?
I had that exact same feeling. Yes.
So now that she knows that he's the master and claims to have power over everything, that's got to be a little bit unnerving as well, but it's going to be really interesting. And speaking of that plane, even after watching this episode twice, I'm not positive how or when the head of Vor, Daniel Barton, disappeared from the captain's seat, you know, leaving the cockpit bomb in his place. Was Daniel ever really there? Is it trickery by the master? Or did those aliens come consume him and take him to that other place as well?
Oh, that's a good thought. My first thought is that, well, it's the master, so for sure that some of it was some type of trickery. And I believe one scene showed, when she first opened the bay doors on the back of the plane and he was tapping the screen so that the alert would go away. Well, just tapping the screen and then the alert did go away. I feel like he was truly there. But with the master actually being part of the doctor's crew running after the plane, maybe he already had an exit strategy for Daniel. Maybe did exactly that. Had the aliens, whoever they are, come snatch him away and leave a bomb instead? I'm not sure.
We'll probably know more Sunday night, and I can't wait.
Yes, that's so soon. That's great. Twice in 1 week. Oh, amazing.
That's a lot of who. Before we dig into our ratings of the episode, let's get a feel for what the audience thought. I posted out on the Twitter poll at Doctor Who GSM, as well as in the Don't Blink Facebook community group. How would you rate this episode on a scale of 1 to 10? And the votes were all over the place. I was kind of surprised. Only 35% of the people that voted gave it a 10. 23% gave it a 9. 20% gave it an 8, which left 22% that just said other, but didn't really comment if they were giving it a 7, a 6, a 1. Hard to tell. But with that in mind, what kind of rating, Jada, do you give this episode, Spyfall Part 1?
My rating for it is a 9 out of 10. Masterfully concealed reveals, because the reveal of the master really did get me. I enjoyed it greatly. And as I said, it was a little bit slower, but then it picked up. And then all of a sudden the master was there. It was great.
What about you? And then he went into full berserk mode immediately.
Yes.
That was in some intense acting. I also am going to give this episode 9 out of 10 mini-me's in a tiny pocket-sized box.
that was something the master would for sure do. Put him in a matchbox.
Just wait. Listener feedback's coming up, and there's a lot more great info all about that. But first, here's a little info about another great show right here on the GSM Podcast Network.
There's a fifth dimension beyond.
Robert, what are you doing?
What do you mean, Daryl? I was creating the promo for the fifth dimension, our new Twilight Zone podcast, like you asked me to.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean, what's with that terrible Rod Serling impersonation?
I don't know what you mean. I was just speaking in my normal voice.
Are you sure?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, fine. Try it again.
There's a fifth dimension beyond.
See, you're doing it again.
Maybe you should just do it yourself.
Okay, fine. There's a fifth dimension beyond that.
Really? Are you kidding me?
What?
That was the worst Rod Serling impersonation I've ever heard.
I wasn't impersonating Rod Serling. I tell you what, let's just do this together, okay?
All right, fine. But, you know, but don't screw it up.
Fine. Same for you. There's a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man.
Within that dimension is a new podcast from Golden Spiral Media dedicated to the Twilight Zone.
Join me and Robert as we discuss the new series from CBS All Access and the original series we all love so much.
It's called The Fifth Dimension. Subscribe today wherever you listen to podcasts.
And now it's time for some listener feedback. Since the rest of the episodes of Doctor Who are scheduled for Sunday nights, and we are hoping to record the Don't Blink podcast on Tuesday afternoons, please get your thoughts and theories into us every Monday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. Our voicemail number is 304-837-2278. Or we can be reached at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. Now, first up in our listener feedback segment, we've got Jeff Gentry, X-Force 11, from the Castle Rock Zone podcast on GSM.
Hello, Whovians. This is Jeff, X-Force 11, leaving my feedback for Spyfall Part 1. New decade, new master. Absolutely love it. Love the idea that we're going to get to see a new master with this actor taking his spot. And looks like we've got a new TARDIS. He's got a TARDIS being his house in the Outback that was flying among the clouds as we got to see it when they were on the jet. So many possibilities. Loved all the homages to James Bond and other spy thrillers. I am so ready for this season. So glad Doctor Who is back, and so glad Don't Blink is back. All right, X-Force 11 is out.
Awesome. Jeff, thank you so much for that voice message. And yes, of course, shout outs to the new master played by Sacha Dhawan. I had seen him in Sherlock, and he did a great job there. And he's also from Iron Fist, but I haven't watched that show before. Have you?
Yeah, I did.
sound pretty excited about it.
Yeah, it was good. It was a show. That's for sure.
Okay. Well, at least now he's going to be internet famous forever now by playing the master on even just one episode of Doctor Who. You're immortalized.
Oh, absolutely. No matter who you are, that's an upgrade.
Put that on your IMDb page as soon as the producers let you do so. And Jeff also loved the spy thriller aspects and the fact that the Master's TARDIS was his Australian outback house all along. Genius.
Yes, it took me a second to realize that that was what was going on. Tongue twister there.
Oh, me too, because it looked like the Master even commented, it looked so much like the Wicked Witch of the West and the Wizard of Oz and the spinning house in the sky that got me distracted from, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this picture.
Or something quite right, the Master's TARDIS.
And when you think back to earlier in the episode, that they were in his TARDIS and didn't even know it.
It does give you chills, doesn't it? I love the Master.
Yeah, especially knowing, you know, what he could probably do with his TARDIS that, you know, it's just unfathomable, just shocking. Let's see who else sent us some voice messages. They either gave us a call at the Golden Spiral feedback line at area code 304-837-2278 or submitted it by attaching it through goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback.
Hey there, Wayne and Jada. Samuel Lewis here from Going Through Who at tscn.tv/GTW. That's GTW for Going Through Who. It's time. Doctor Who is finally back. It's about dang time. And, well, if the wait was any indication, we got something good for our waiting. So the first episode, Spyfall. Now, I go into this saying I am a massive James Bond fan. So the little nods and winks and things like that that show up, oh my God, yes. I loved every single one of them, whether they were parodies of James Bond or just flat out, you know, borrowing from James Bond, because we can freaking do that. So interesting little notes that pop up into my head about this episode. Let's talk about Stephen Fry first, because come on. It's been public knowledge that Stephen Fry has wanted to get in this show for a while. He's been very public about it. And now we finally have Stephen Fry, and they could not have picked a better role for him. The M archetype, if you will, of the Doctor Who universe. But in this, he's called C, right? So he's supposed to be M, the head of MI6, if you're talking James Bond terms, pretty much. Even down to him thinking old school and assuming that Graham was the Doctor. Fantastic moment. Loved it to pieces. But of course, sadly, we have Stephen Fry become part of the Doctor Who body count, which a lot of actors, from what I've heard, love whenever they become part of the body count. And somehow, I would think Stephen Fry would be among that number. So there we go. Stephen Fry died on Doctor Who. He's part of the many that have fallen, as it were. The aliens are interesting. We've clearly given the Doctor something she's never dealt with before, and something that we're not entirely sure how she's going to deal with it. I mean, this is a two-parter, so they need to bring up the stakes. So I think the stakes are properly put together, although, to be honest, once we got the other reveal, it's clear that the aliens in this case are going to be the secondary, probably, to who's in charge, the master spy, if you will, or the spy master, as he stuck it in there because he can't frickin' help himself. That's right. We have a new master, which we saw Missy start to regenerate, so it makes sense. Of course we were going to have a new master. She could have always shown up again, wibbly wobbly timey wimey, but it's good. We've got a new one. And he's a person of color. It is so cool to see that be a thing. It's almost like the master keeps on looking at the Doctor and going, oh, you're going to be progressive. Hold my alcoholic beverage that they have on Gallifrey and I'll show you progressive. You know, so it's interesting that they keep on doing that with the master as a way of going, look, you cranky ones that don't think that this can be done. Oh, it can be done, you know, and thankfully, those are a minority of people that still think that way. But, you know, most of us don't pay attention to them. But it's still something that is to be pointed out. It was really nice. And it's the actor that played Waris Hussein in Adventure in Time and Space, to which someone on Twitter gave the most hilarious tweet I've ever seen in my life. So Waris Hussein was the master the whole time. So it was cute. It was really cute. his portrayal of the Master, I think it's going to be interesting because for me, the Master needs to be subtle. Those are the versions of the Master I like. The only real version of the Master I've run into in any medium and never really liked was the original John Sims version. I say original John Sims version because then whenever he shows back up and confronts Missy about possibly being good, suddenly he's subtle. He's what I think a master should be. So I can't just say John Sims is a blanket statement. I really have to say John Sims Master as written by Russell T. Davies. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but that is kind of what I'm meaning whenever I'm saying that. Just, I think it was a misstep to try to necessarily go full ham on making an evil 10th Doctor to that degree. I understand that's what you're supposed to do with the Master, but, you know, still. But yeah, just tiny classic series things with the Master. Like, for instance, he's got a tissue compression eliminator again. And for those of you that don't know, why did he have a tiny dude inside of a matchbox? And some of you go, what the heck is that? Allow me. A tissue compression eliminator is the first weapon that the Master ever carried around. It's a pretty gruesome weapon, and I can see why some modern sensibilities might not have liked it, and that's why we went in for a laser screwdriver. Plus, come on, the joke. Yeah, has to. But the TCE is a weapon that takes, I guess the best technobabble way of explaining it is takes your cell structure and compresses it tight, tighter and tighter and tighter and more painfully until you die from it because you've been compressed so much that your organs have been compressed, every vital vein in you has been compressed, everything that keeps you alive has been crushed. And then you end up being a tiny figurine because, well, you've been crushed. You've been turned into this smaller version of yourself that has no capability of living whatsoever because it's not a shrink ray. It doesn't shrink everything in appropriateness. It literally crushes you to death painfully. But that being said, it's lovely that the TCE's back. And he clearly has a TARDIS again. So the Master has acquired a TARDIS again. And it was his hut the entire time, too. That is so cool to me that the Master is now fully equipped and ready to fight again. Because as much as it is interesting taking things away from the Master and making them have to work for it a bit harder than the Doctor does, you give both of them the full kits, and then it's just their brains that they have to use to play chess with. Oh, yeah. This is going to be good. But he seems like he's going to be good because he's got a mix of subtle look in my eyes. You can see how insane I am. And also gleeful hilarity of loving seeing the Doctor squirm. So he's got that perfect mix of both, which to me will be interesting to watch him play out now that he's fully pulled the veil off. And we'll get to next week, see an episode with him fully Master-esque. So Those are really my thoughts, and I will now give up the floor so other people can actually say something. Me and my long-winded stuff. But yeah, good to be back, guys, and it'll be great to hear your voices again as you guys tell me what you thought of the episodes, along with everyone else in the community. The Don't Blink community has been fantastic for keeping me there while Doctor Who has been off air. So love you guys. And it's going to be a good season, guys, if this is any indication. See ya.
Samuel Lewis, thank you so much for sending that in, putting that together. And be sure to check out his Going Through Who podcast. They're going through all the Who. They're midway or a little past midway of classic Who, and they're just going in order. And so that helps keep you up to date. And so he was the perfect one to call in about some of these classic things. But first, Stephen Fry. Oh, my goodness. You want to talk about an IMDb page?
Oh, yeah.
I think he's been in everything. And so he finally got his wish to be on Doctor Who, and now he's no longer with us. And Samuel brought up an interesting point about how when we last saw Missy and the John Sims Master dueling it out, he mentioned seeing Missy starting to regenerate, but I thought that the John Sims Master said that he did something so she wouldn't have any more regenerations. So I'm not exactly sure if that's maybe implying that this current Master O, if maybe he's an older version from even before the John Sims Master, and things are just timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, but I know it's only been one episode, so I'm getting way ahead of myself. Sorry about that.
Yeah, but it would be interesting to see a Master from an earlier timeline that the Doctor just hasn't crossed yet. But is that possible? Because, you know what? It's too early in the season to even start. You're right.
Just laying it out there.
And to bring things full circle, Chibnall and crew had that first season, their freshman season as showrunner, to play and see what works and what doesn't work. And now, with their second season coming, or here now, they prove that they can pull out a nice story. I think so far has been written very well. But they can also give the appropriate nods to the old things, like bringing back the classic Doctor Who Master's weapon of the tissue compressor eliminator, or as Samuel let us know, the TCE.
That's something that I hadn't even heard of before. I admit to not getting to as many episodes of Classic Who as I should have, but thank you, Samuel Lewis, for bringing that up. He said this was actually the Master's first weapon from way, way back in the day. I got to find that episode and watch some of that. If he had a tiny little person in a little matchbox that he carried in his pocket, or if he just shrunk down people and killed them and threw them around. But the way Samuel described it, it sounds a lot more devious and painful than on the surface that it appears.
Yeah, it seems simply cruel.
That sounds like the Master.
Yep.
And how ominous is it that the Master has his own TARDIS again? Until Samuel mentioned it, I didn't realize what a big deal that is.
You know, it's interesting because I remember Missy having her TARDIS, but it was never made into a thing. It was never brought up much, and they never made much of it. I believe now, though, that these guys, these current creators and showrunners and story writers are going to really give us exactly what Samuel said he wants to see. Both the Doctor and the Master fully kitted out and ready to go at it. And I'm down. I want to see it. This looks great.
I think it's coming our way. And also, Samuel, thanks again for the kind words about the Don't Blink Facebook community. Yeah, there's some diehard Doctor Who fans in there, and everybody's, you know, pretty much, what's the word? I was going to think of nice, but that's not the best way to describe it. But, you know, we don't tolerate, you know, if somebody did decide to go off the deep end and do crazy backstabbing and whatever. So it's a good place. It's a safe place. It's a nice place.
It is. It's a wonderful place.
Also got some great thought-provoking feedback as well in the Don't Blink Facebook group. Jeff Gentry, who you heard from a little earlier, he shared a link from the Sci-Fi Network with some thoughts on the Master's timeline that really helped him grapple with how this could all be happening. And we'll link to that sci-fi article in our show notes for this episode, the blog post at don'tblinkpodcast.com.
Well, you know, in our group also, Bianca pointed out less than 0.1% is the difference between man and apes. 7% is huge. You know, of course, she's referring to the difference in DNA. She's referring to 7% that Daniel, oh my goodness, I can never remember his last name, but the CEO, Daniel, he's 7%. Now, were we shown how much, or were we even told how much Yaz had changed?
I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it was the same percentage.
Okay.
I'm not positive what that means if everybody that does get affected by these alien creatures, if that percentage is just how it happens, and what the meaning behind all of that is that their way to infiltrate or just be able to even appear in this plane of existence. But yeah, if man and apes are supposedly just 0.1% different in their DNA, 7%. Yeah, Bianca, that is huge. And Neil commented, the TARDIS in the vineyard is not a special effects masterpiece. It sure looks like a small, non-detailed model of the TARDIS there. Well, they spent all the effects budget on all the other great things in this episode.
But, you know, somehow it's kind of cool, because if the TARDIS was actually in a vineyard like that, that's probably what it would look like, out of place, like a small wooden box in a vineyard.
And you never know, maybe that wasn't the actual TARDIS we saw in the vineyard. Maybe it was a shrunk down, compressed version from the mask. No, never mind. I'm sorry. Going off the deep end. Please forgive me.
You know, Fred said, I really like the idea of this episode, right up until the reveal of O as the master. Yeah, they got me. But it's a bit of a retcon for his character. And I have said before that the master, as a totally unhinged villain with superpowers, gets really old fast. Let's see how it goes for part two. I'm still loving having the gang back together. And as I said, the idea of this story was fun. Are they going to use the spy toys after all? Yeah, see, that's what I was wondering. They show some great gadgets, and they even hinted at possibly using some, but then they didn't. Maybe they will. Maybe part two will see us through that.
I would think so. At least one or two of them have to be, because Ryan and Graham were both pretty excited to be in there and being shown all the things that could be put into those briefcases. And so we got to get at least the cufflinks. Let's see some of those cufflinks, at least that. Good point, Fred. And Graham, no relation to the Graham on the TV show, said in the Facebook group, I love the new Doctor, but the companions are a little bit wooden and dull, except for Graham, who is great.
I see what you did there, Graham. I don't know about wooden and dull. I have to say that I kind of liked the companions in this. Graham, as the companion, was great as always. He had great lines. He delivered them well. Really made you feel that the character was saying or believing whatever he was saying or trying to believe. I like the growth that we saw in Ryan, especially in the beginning.
Yes.
When he was playing ball with his friends and whatnot. And later when he was talking to Yaz about he would never let her die, and he was truly concerned. And Yaz herself being freaked out from being, you know, transported to an alternate universe and just everything they were going through. I think there's a bit of dynamics there. We may not have gotten as in depth into stories for them, but this is only the first episode, only the first half of the first story. So, I think that Chibnall and crew have got the right idea, and that they're going to give us a little bit of what we want, a little bit of in-depth from the characters, and a little more to them. I think it's coming.
I think so too, Jada. I mean, I definitely see Graham's point, because compared to the Doctor and, of course, the reveal of the Master near the end of the episode, just those two things put together will overshadow anything. If the episode would have ended, say, 25 minutes earlier, and we didn't get all of the stuff on the plane, if that was saved for part two, I think we probably would have thought we had a more balanced representation of the growth of all the different companions, the friends. But, you know, you throw this Master reveal in there and you can't really compete with that very well.
And, you know, that's probably the way it should be. It's a season opener, the sophomore season. and they wanted to give you what you wanted, companions that are well-rounded at this point, still have their issues, but just when you're okay with them, wow, did you forget the master is a thing? Yeah. That's how you do a season opener, I believe. But for all of you wonderful listeners out there, we want to make sure that you keep the conversation going with us over at our Don't Blink Facebook group. Some of the other excellent conversations happening right now include, watch the YouTube link Bianca shared, reminding us of the last time we saw the Master and Missy on Doctor Who.
Yeah, we're definitely going to need to link to that as well in the show notes at don'tblinkpodcast.com, because I watched that earlier today, because they were both great versions of the Master in my book, and mostly because I mostly just know New Who. I do need to see more of the old classic stuff, but in fact, that's the video that the John Sims Master tells Missy something about he used up all of her regenerations or something to that effect. And I don't know if that's still going to be canon with a show that goes in as many directions as Doctor Who does. I think they try to fit everything into the same canon as much as possible. So it's still a great clip because it does remind us how awesome those two versions of the Master were and how different they are from each other and how different they are from this new version, this new guy, the new kid on the block.
Yeah, you know, that was a masterpiece of a scene between John Sims and Michelle Gomez. Yeah, just a wonderful scene. But it's still the Master. So who knows what contingency plan upon contingency plan upon contingency plan was laid down before any of that happened, and who knows what weird way of squirreling him or herself out of a situation the Master is capable of. So I don't know. I think there are ways that we can fix the continuity, if it's even broken, or there are ways that we can explain the continuity of the Master. It's going to be interesting to see. Yeah, but I would recommend everybody check out that video because it's just good.
Yeah, and I have full faith that they're going to stick to the continuity or find a great way to explain it, because if they go back to classic Doctor Who Masters and having the weapon of the, what was it, the tissue compression eliminator, if they go back to something like that, then they know what they're doing for sure.
Oh yeah. I can't wait. This is going to be a great, great season. Well, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode of Don't Blink. And if you want, you can also follow us on Twitter at Doctor Who GSM. You can follow Wayne at Wayne Henderson, and you can follow me at Jada Wilkerson 74. Remember to subscribe to Don't Blink in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. And also check out all the links and things to be discussed in the show notes at don'tblinkpodcast.com in the details area of your podcast player.
And like Jada said, thank you again for joining us on the Don't Blink podcast. Until next week's episode, please tell all of your friends, whether civilian or super secret spies, all about the Don't Blink podcast. And even if you're no longer 100% human, don't blink. Don't even blink.
Thank you for listening to Don't Blink, a Doctor Who fan podcast, part of the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network of shows. I'm the Doctor in Utah, and the majestic tale of a madman in a box are used with permission from Silver Screen Records. They are composed by Murray Gold and performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Ben Foster. Taken from the original Doctor Who soundtrack, Doctor Who Series 6, available on Silver Screen Records.